Mercy? Some of the grumpiness left his voice, and I was certain. Tad, what are you doing home? How long have you been there, and why didn't you tell me you were home? Tad had been his father's right-hand man in the VW shop when he was 9, and I first met him. He'd kept on as my right hand and chief tool wrangler when his father had retired and let me buy the shop. Tad had left to go to an Ivy League school back east, giving out scholarships to Faye as a way to show how liberal and enlightened they were. We'd emailed once a week since he left, and I called him once a month to keep up. Tad was a little brother I'd never had, and in some ways we were closer than I was to my half-sisters. We had more in common, neither of us quite fitting into either the world of the humans or the world of the supernatural. He, because he was only half-fey, and I, because I was the only shape-shifting coyote in a world full of werewolves and vampires. When the Fae had pulled their disappearing act, I'd called him, both on his cell and on his dorm room phone, to no avail. I'd decided he'd gone to the reservations with all the rest of the Fae. Apparently not. Tad? I asked, because he hadn't answered any of my questions. He hung up on me. Evidently, he didn't want to talk about it. Fair enough. I was a little short for time, too. I dialed again. Go away, Mercy, he said. Your dad told me I should call his house for help, I said, speaking quickly. Bad guys are after Jesse and Gabriel. I have them staying with Gabriel's mom in the hopes that no one will think to look for them there. But if they do, if the bad guys come, there isn't anyone there who can protect them. I could almost feel Tad's reluctance to listen to me instead of hanging up again. Something must have changed in him while he was at college. I'd seen no sign of it in our correspondence or during his infrequent visits home. Maybe it had something to do with the reason that he was out here instead of in the reservation with the rest of the Fae.
You think I could protect them, huh? He said finally.
It was a fair question. Ted was half Fae, but I had no idea what that meant. From a few things that Z had let slip over the years, I knew Tad wasn't one of the half-fae who were as powerless as most humans, but that was all I knew. Your father does. I gave him the only answer I had. He didn't say anything. I have to see if Kyle is okay, I told him. Adam and the whole pack have been taken tonight, and one of the pack was killed. I'm trying to...
Do what? Rescue them? Stop the bad guys?
Check on Kyle, because I think that they might have done something to him when they snatched Warren. I need Jesse and Gabriel to be safe, and I'm a little short of allies. It won't be for long. I'll come get them after I see that Kyle is okay.
I recited Sylvia's address and hung up without waiting for him to say anything else.
I knew Tad. No matter how grumpy he was, he wouldn't be able to sit around while someone was in danger. He'd flirted lightly with Jesse when he'd been home last, then spent 2 hours under the hood of Gabriel's car helping him fix an electrical problem. And the sooner I made sure that Kyle was safe, the sooner I could let Tad off the hook. I put my foot down and hoped the cops were out watching Walmart, the mall, and the interstate routes. The big Mercedes engine gave a satisfied purr and ate up the miles through the desert back to West Richland. The speedometer said 110, but it felt more like 60. I patted the dash and said, "Good girl." The eastern sky was still dark when I neared Kyle's house at a more lawful speed. Kyle and Warren lived in an upscale neighborhood where every house had ample garage space and driveways to catch the overflow. Usually there were no cars on the street unless someone was having a party. I passed a modest, dark, American-built car parked half a block from Kyle's house, and as I drove sedately by, I saw that there was an unfamiliar black SUV in the driveway. There were no lights on at the house, not even the one by the door that Kyle left on all night. The SUV in the car had California plates. I drove right past and turned the corner, parking Marsilia's dark, not American-built car, in front of a house twice the size of Kyle's, where it looked much more at home than the cars I'd just passed. I got out and opened the back. "It doesn't look good for Kyle," I whispered to Ben. "Did you see those cars?"
His ears flattened, and he stood up in the back seat, his sharp claws digging into the leather even through the blanket in a way that might have caused me to wince on any other day.
"No," said Stefan, scaring me out of what was left of my wits.
If he hadn't covered my mouth with a cool hand, I would have awoken the neighborhood. He made soothing sounds until I quit struggling, which was an embarrassingly long time. I was tired, and my head had just blanked out for a little bit, and it took a while to realize what had happened.
"There now," Stefan said, his voice pitched low enough that a human standing next to him might have had trouble hearing. "Better? I am sorry. I didn't want to alert anyone."
Sorry for sneaking up on me, or sorry for holding my mouth shut? I couldn't tell, and didn't care. He was here, and I didn't feel so alone. Stefan was smart, dangerous, and competent. I hoped that I was the first to, but it was the third I really needed for this.
"Kyle's in trouble," I whispered back.
Keeping our voices down made sense. People ignore the sounds of cars, but most of them will wake up to the sound of a strange voice. I didn't want to wake the neighborhood watch and try to explain to them what we were doing.
"There is a car and an SUV parked by his house that shouldn't be there, and no outside light. Kyle always turns on the porch light."
Stefan released me and took a couple of steps back, leaving me to grip the open car door for balance when Ben bumped against me as he got out. Stefan was wearing a dark polo and slacks, and I missed the Scooby-Doo shirts and jeans. I hadn't seen him wear them for a while, not since he'd left the Seethe. He wasn't emaciated, but he had never regained the healthy look that he'd had before Marsilia had laid waste to the menagerie of humans he fed from. Marsilia's betrayal and the destruction of his menagerie had nearly destroyed him.
"I had a few minutes to check out the house while I was waiting for you," he said. "There are two strangers in the living room opposite the kitchen. There may be more on the upper floor because the lights are on."
Now that we were not touching, I could see the awkwardness the older vampires I'd met exhibited, as if he knew how he should act but couldn't quite feel it anymore. As if by giving up his Scooby-Doo shirts and his beloved mystery machine, Stefan had given up his last firm anchor to his humanity. Still, the mystery machine, Stefan's old VW bus with the cool paint job, remained parked in his driveway, so I had hope.
"You didn't see Kyle?" I asked.
"I didn't see him. I don't have your nose to follow a scent, and I didn't want them to know I was watching. They were just a little too alert for my comfort. I could smell blood, though. I don't know whose it was."
"I would." He waited, and I considered.
"Let's go around back," I said. "I can slip in through the back porch. There's a dog door Kyle put in for Warren. I can check out the house and call you in when I find him."
"I think that sending you into the house alone is the stupidest of our many options," said Stefan repressively. "Ben should be at the front door. You should go to the back and wait in the yard, Mercy, and I will go in."
The oldest and most powerful vampires acquire names that define their most prominent characteristic. Stefan's name among his kind was the Soldier. This was a sort of situation in which he excelled. I felt the relief of having an expert make the calls.
"They are only human," Stefan said.
And there was a familiar look in his face, though I was more used to seeing it on the wolves. Hunger.
"I will kill them, and Ben will kill any who get past me. You can let us know if anyone tries to get away out the back, and we will kill them, too."
Stefan had always liked people. I hadn't noticed before that he also enjoyed killing them. Maybe that was part of the new, more vampiric Stefan. So much for letting someone else make the calls.
"We don't need to kill them," I pointed out reasonably. "As you said, they are only human, and there are only two."
"That we know of," he said.
"We don't know anything about them," I told him. "We aren't even certain that the two men in Kyle's living room have anything to do with the people who took the pack."
Stefan raised an eyebrow. He was right. Who else would they be?
"We don't know who is backing them or what their end game is," I continued doggedly. "We don't even know if Kyle is there. What I do know is that we can't go in to kill."
Stefan frowned at me.
"I forget that you are too young to remember the lessons of Vietnam. Go in to win, Mercy, or do not go in at all. How many people are out here who could help, Adam?"
"Us," I said wretchedly, then added,
"Maybe Ariana, though she was pretty freaked out when we left."
I knew what he was saying. I did. By that logic, we should leave Kyle to his fate. But I wasn't just Adam's wife. I was his mate. That made me second in rank, and that meant I had to protect the pack. It meant that I especially had to protect the weakest members first. We had already lost Peter. Kyle needed to be protected, and we could do it without killing everyone.
"These people have taken down an entire pack of werewolves, Mercy," Stefan said coolly. "We cannot afford to take risks, or we might throw away the game trying to find out what they have done with Kyle."
He lost the distant vampire thing when he said Kyle's name. Stefan liked Kyle, who was snarky and happy to argue tactics in Scooby-Doo episodes as if defending a doctoral thesis.
"If they are waiting at Kyle's, whom do you think they want? The only people important to Adam they don't have are you, Ben, and Jesse. And there is this. If they see me, if they understand what I am and do not die before they can tell their superiors over their communication devices, then we will lose more than just Kyle this night."
"People don't know about the vampires. Oh, they know the stories. Bram Stoker and all his ilk make good use of the old legends. But they think they are just stories. The problem for the vampire is now that the Fae and the werewolves have admitted what they are, people are ready to believe that the old stories might be true. If Stefan was the vampire who gave those legends new life, Marsilia would kill him. I understood why he thought killing the enemy was the best way. Part of me even agreed with him about killing them all. These people had killed Peter and taken Adam and put my world into danger.
Kyle is a human, and they were not worried about leaving Peter dead," Stefan said, saying what I didn't want to hear. "Kyle is less valuable than Peter was. He only matters to you and Warren. Adam would not kill someone, risk the werewolf standing in the human world for Kyle. A hostage is a lot more work than a dead body, Mercy. There is a real chance Kyle is already dead. If you aren't willing to kill, you need to leave them alone."
"If Kyle is dead, and didn't that suck to say, we still need to know it. I don't think he is. I think I'd feel it through the pack bonds, because Warren is as mated to him as Honey was to Peter." That thought steadied me. I'd felt Honey's grief, still did, for that matter. "We are going in after Kyle. And Stefan, we can't leave a pile of bodies behind. We can hide your part in this. I'll tell everyone that you are a weird kind of werewolf if I have to. But people know about Kyle and Warren. Warren doesn't advertise what he is, but it will come out because he doesn't hide it either. The bad guys, whoever they are, want Adam to kill an important man in a public way so that the werewolves are blamed. I have the distinct impression that the last part is as important as the first. If we leave piles of dead bodies in our wake, we'll be accomplishing at least half of what the people who started this want." I sucked in a breath. "I do not enjoy helping my enemies." Stefan frowned at me. He could just go in and kill them all, regardless of what I said. But his name was the soldier, not the killer or the commander. Yes, those are real vampires. I'm told that we're lucky they don't live anywhere near here. Stefan had ceded me leadership, because this was my problem. So I was in charge. But I wasn't dumb enough to think that made me competent. I needed Stefan for that. Fine. I wouldn't authorize killing them all, but there should be other options. "Could we go in quietly to check and see if we can find Kyle?" I asked. "I might be able to scent him from the outside. If he's not here, we can leave them waiting for no one. If he is there, maybe we can get him out without killing people." He shook his head.
"Mercy, they have already proved themselves capable of taking a werewolf back. Kill them or leave."
I glanced down at Ben. He was in no shape for battle. The danger wasn't just that his wound would slow him, and they could hurt him more easily, though that was part of it. If Ben killed tonight, wounded and shaken by Peter's death, he would lose control of his wolf and never regain it.
"We might be under attack by the government," I told Stefan. "We can't afford to lose the moral high ground. As long as we don't do any harm, the public will support us and force the government to back down. We're not going in to kill everyone in sight." You are welcome to leave if you'd like, I said grimly, stripping my shirt off with my bra.
He wouldn't abandon Kyle. I knew it. I was mad at him because I wanted to let him dictate our plan of attack, but I couldn't because I knew I was right. I kicked off my shoes. We were talking too much, and it was time to move.
I'm not leaving Kyle to rot when I might be able to do something for him. I'm going to look for Kyle. When I find him, I'll do whatever it takes to get him out. I will try to leave as few bodies behind as I can manage.
If we fail, Adam is the one who loses, Stefan said.
Kyle is pack, I explained. He is vulnerable. Adam is alpha and strong. So we need to make sure Kyle is safe first, because that's what pack does, Stefan. The strong protect the weak.
Stefan's face froze. He hadn't been able to protect his menagerie. Hadn't realized that he needed to protect them from Marsilia, the woman he'd given his loyalty. I hadn't meant to hurt him. I jerked down my jeans and underwear so I was naked on the dark sidewalk. Anyone looking out their window or driving by would get a show. I didn't care. Being a shapeshifter had gotten me over modesty by the time I was old enough to know what the word meant. That didn't mean I was comfortable running around naked in front of everyone I knew. Once upon a time, Stefan had kind of had a thing for me. Not so much in love, but interested in that direction. I usually avoided being naked in front of him, just like you don't hold out a slab of meat in front of a lion while planning on keeping the food to yourself.
We have an opportunity to save Kyle. A chance you did not have when Marsilia took your people, I told him. Will you help me?
I changed to coyote without waiting for a reply and shook the change off my fur. Stefan gave an odd laugh, not happy or humorous, but it sounded like him this time, and not the vampire Stefan, so it was all right. Then he picked up my clothes and tossed them into the car, his motion smooth and almost human. He hesitated with his head in the car. My gun was under the front seat. I almost changed back to let him know, but decided not to. I couldn't carry it, and I was the only one who would be more dangerous with a gun in my hand tonight.
Blood and humans and sweat and...
Stefan stood up and shut the back door.
Mercy, you let me talk to Marsilia about this before you return her car.
I gave him a brief nod and trotted toward Kyle's house. Ben was on three legs, but he had no trouble keeping up. Stefan brought up the rear. The guy next door to Kyle had died a while ago, and the house was still empty with a for sale sign in the tidy front yard. The gate to the backyard was open, so I led my posse in that way. There was an 8-foot stone fence between the yards, but someone had left a ladder next to it. Had old Mr. What's-His-Name been sneaking into Kyle's swimming pool before he died, or, and this was more troublesome, had someone been spying on them? In any case, it was not much effort to get over the fence. Even on three good legs, Ben didn't have to use the ladder, nor did Stefan. As a coyote, I'm outclassed by the werewolves and the vampires in everything except blending in. Like the empty house, someone kept Kyle's yard neat and tidy so that we ghosted over grass rather than rustling through the leaves of fall. We kept to the shadows, though I don't think that anyone would have seen Stefan if he'd walked through the middle of the backyard. He was doing something, some vampire magic, that made him really hard to focus on. I kept a sharp eye out, but I didn't see anyone keeping watch. That didn't mean they weren't there, but between Stefan's mojo and the concealing pack magic that Ben and I were pulling around ourselves, only truly bad luck would allow a human to see us anyway. I could smell it before we hit the house. There was blood on the lawn. I abandoned the shadows to cast out until I found where the dark, wet stuff splattered the grass, because it was Warren's blood I smelled. Ben sniffed beside me and snarled soundlessly, exposing his fangs as he turned his eyes to the house. From the back, it was as dark as the front. But this near the house, we could both hear the murmuring of voices from inside. They were being quiet, and had we been human, we would not have heard them at all. As it was, I couldn't hear what they were saying, just a rumble of men's voices. They'd taken Warren here, in the backyard. He'd been in human shape. A werewolf's scent changes when they are in human form, becomes diluted. That they took him in the yard was good. That I smelled only his blood was also good. That meant that all of Kyle and Warren's friends who'd come over for Thanksgiving probably weren't in the middle of a firefight. That was good news, and not just for Kyle and Warren's friends. Once these people began killing innocent humans, there was no way back. Their only survival path would then be to kill everyone who knew about them, including Adam and the whole pack. As long as the dead were werewolves, it was unlikely that they had to worry much about the consequences as far as the human justice system was concerned. With the Fae, the courts had already demonstrated that when put to the test, fear beat out justice. For us, right now, that was a good thing. As long as we could keep the villains off the defensive, Adam should be okay. What Stefan had said was true. They were obviously waiting for someone, and Jesse, Ben, and I were the logical targets. I had to assume that they were prepared to deal with Ben and me. Stefan would throw a wrench in their plans, but I didn't know if it was a big enough wrench. While I was debating, someone started speaking. The voices were coming from Kyle and Warren's bedroom on the second floor. I looked up and saw that the blinds weren't drawn. Unusual for Warren, who was quite aware that there were things that could look in your window in the dark.
"They aren't coming," someone said. "We can't afford to wait until daylight. We need to find them. Orders are to get the information." "Yes, sir," a second man said. "How far can I go?"
The second man gave us a total of at least four. I could still hear the rumble of the other two down in Kyle's living room.
"Get the information," the first man said,
and I heard the bedroom door shut and the footsteps of someone leaving.
"You hear that, Johnny?"
There was a sick eagerness in his voice.
"He said I could go as far as I want."
Another man, presumably Johnny, giving me a count of five bad guys, said softly,
"Only until we get the information, Sal. You hear that? Give us what we want, and I'll stop him." Sal was captured by the Afghanis a while back and didn't come back quite right. He likes torture. Tell us where they are likely to have gone to ground, and everything stops.
Silence.
"So where would they go?"
someone asked, and there was a sound of flesh on flesh. Someone made a noise, and the hair on the back of my neck rose as my lips pulled back from my teeth. Kyle. They were hitting Kyle.
"Staying quiet isn't helping, son," said the soft voice. "I don't want to do this. Boss don't want to hold your lover any longer than we have to. Takes a lot of people to hold a werewolf pack, and some of them are going to get dead. If we can get Hauptmann's daughter and wife, we can let the rest of you the fuck go."
I wonder if Kyle heard the lie.
"Fuck you," he said.
Maybe he had. A divorce attorney, I expect, would have a lot of practice telling when someone was lying. They hit him again. Beside me, Ben was vibrating. Stefan said, sounding hungry,
"Mercy, there are only two of them in that room."
I shifted back to human so we could talk. Ben nudged my knee hard.
"I know," I told him. "Can we take them without alerting the others?"
I shivered. The Tri-Cities wasn't Montana, but it was still too cold to stand around naked in November. Or maybe I was shivering with my coyote's desire to go kill someone. The first man said something ugly, and Kyle made a noise. Yep, it was the go-kill-someone shiver.
"We can," Stefan said. "And if not, I can kill them all."
That didn't sound like a bad plan, standing out here listening to them hurt Kyle. I knew it would be stupid to leave bodies, but his pain was putting paid to my good sense.
"Throw me up," I told him, and turned back into a coyote.
I looked at Stefan. And when he met my eyes, I jerked my chin to the balcony that came off the bedroom. He frowned at me doubtfully. I rose up on my hind legs and bounced once. Then I lifted my muzzle toward the balcony again. His eyebrows rose, but he picked me up and threw me. I cleared the railing but had to twist hard, so I landed in the middle of a planter instead of on top of the lawn furniture that might squeak under me. Ben jumped to the top of the railing, and Stefan followed. Stefan hopped off and landed on the balcony with bent knees and no sound. Ben's ears flattened at me, so I moved off the planter and let the heavier werewolf use it as a stair so that he didn't have to land so heavily. Hard to land quietly on a hard surface with werewolf-sized claws.
Chapter 4. The brocade drapes were an inheritance from the people who had built the house. Kyle loved the fabric,
but complained a lot about the way they left 6 inches between the bottom of the curtains and the floor. I dropped to my knees and peered through the bottom of the sliding glass door that Kyle planned to replace with French doors next summer, along with the drapes. Kyle and Warren's bedroom was decorated in a minimalist and very civilized style. The blood on the carpet looked like the single contrasting note one of those designers on TV liked to recommend. There was so little furniture that the villains had had to bring up a chair from the dining room so they had something to use to stage their interrogation. They tied Kyle to the sturdy chair, naked. His feet were free, but it didn't matter because they were also bare. Unless you are a werewolf, or maybe Bruce Lee, bare feet can't do much damage unless you have more of a strike opportunity than being tied to a chair presents. From the looks of him, this wasn't the first round of abuse he'd taken. I kept my growl to myself, though I could do nothing about the snarl that wrinkled my nose. Kyle's face was bruised. The aristocratic nose sat at an angle, and dried blood covered his chin and upper chest. A cut above one eye had bled too, and that eye was swollen shut and purple. There were red marks on his cheekbone and stomach that were fresher, having not had time to bruise. The two men in the room were dressed all in black, and they wore the same body armor the men who held Adam had worn. The taller man was bald, his skin tanned by a life spent outdoors. I put his age between 25 and 30. The other man was heavier built and not so tan, his hair the shade of rust and cut tightly against his scalp. The bald man's body language was relaxed, and that made the worry he projected in his voice even more of a lie than the words.
"I don't like letting him free to do as he wants, Mr. Brooks. It isn't good for him or you. He might do some serious damage, things that can't be repaired. I can stop him if you just let us know where you think she might go. We'll get out of your hair and you never have to see us again."
Kyle spat out blood.
"You must be Faye. I never heard so much truth built into a lie. Did your mother have wings and pointed ears?" he asked, his voice as cool as it was in the courtroom.
Hadn't Kyle ever heard that you weren't supposed to antagonize your kidnappers, especially when they were beating on you? At least he had their attention fully on him. Taking advantage of their preoccupation, I changed back to human and reached up to the catch on the glass door, which was, luckily for us, unlocked. Hopefully the heavy drapes would disguise the cold outside air now wafting into the room as I carefully, quietly slid the door open. It was good for us and for Kyle that he had not had time to replace either the door or the drapes. As soon as I had it opened, Stefan dropped to his knees to get a good look through the gap between the floor and the drapes, and I shifted back to Coyote. My four-footed shape might not be as impressive as one of the wolves, but it was more lethal than my human shape. I squeezed next to Stefan and looked again. The bald man's face had lost its pleasantness, though he'd taken his time to answer Kyle's taunt.
"Your mouth is dangerous to you, Mr. Brooks. I'd suggest you use it to give us the information we want, or you might not be able to use it at all."
"You're a dead man," Kyle said. "Warren doesn't take kindly to people who hurt me."
We had to get in there, and now the only obstacle was the curtain. If we could be quiet enough, the men downstairs would not hear us.
"Your Warren is our prisoner," said the bald man, back to his Mr. Nice Guy persona. "He can do nothing to help you."
Kyle smiled.
"You just keep telling yourselves that."
The younger man bounced a couple of times on his feet and feigned a strike. Kyle pulled his head out of the line of fire, and the man hit him in the shoulder with a spinning back kick that launched Kyle's chair over onto its side. If he'd hit him in the head with that foot, Kyle would have been dead. On the floor, Kyle's face was aimed right at me. He blinked twice and shook his head.
"Get the hell out of here." "I'm sorry, Mr. Brooks, but we can't do that," said the bald man with mock sorrow, unaware that Kyle hadn't been talking to him.
The other man put a foot on the chair and rocked it a little. Stefan had stood up so there was room for Ben to put his head on the ground next to me and look below the curtain, too. When he saw Kyle, the werewolf went still. Ben was not the largest werewolf in the pack, though he was big enough, but he was among the most dangerous. He was fast, and he wasn't bothered by the thought of killing someone, even when he was as human as he ever got. He had been abused, severely abused, when he was a child. People outside the pack and Adam's family just weren't real to him. We were working on that, Adam and I, but I discovered right then that Ben considered Kyle one of the pack. Better to aim my weapon than to let it go off half-cocked. I bumped him, and when I had his attention, I pulled my nose out from under the curtain. Then I looked up at the top of the curtain and back to him. Shapeshifting makes all of us pretty good at charades. Ben stood up and kept going until he stood balanced on his good hind leg, with a front paw on the side of the house next to the sliding door. I backed out of the way, and realized that Ben and I were alone on the balcony. Stefan had disappeared. I nodded sharply, and Ben's free front paw slammed the curtain, rod and all, onto the ground where it would not interfere with us. I'd gathered myself to leap, but what I saw made me pause, because there was no one to attack. Stefan was already in the room, lowering the bald man to the ground with gentle care. The first man, the man who'd hurt Kyle, was dead, his eyes starting to fog over, and his body draped over Kyle. Stefan had incapacitated both men without either making a sound. Pretty efficient, the coyote in me thought, and the rest of me was very, very glad that Stefan was on my side. Despite my earlier stand, even knowing it could come back and bite us, I couldn't deny that I was happy that Stefan had killed Kyle's assailant. I changed back to human and hauled the dead man off Kyle while Ben aimed himself at the bindings on Kyle's wrists that held the rest of him into the chair. Stefan touched Ben's nose and moved it out of the way. He looked at the bindings for a moment. Yellow nylon rope wrapped Kyle's wrists and wove in and out of the sturdy wooden chair.
There is no way the police are going to believe you broke out of that.
And that was the first sign I had that Stefan really had taken what I'd told him to heart. We were going to call the police, and Kyle, very human Kyle, was going to rescue himself. Stefan put a hand on the seat of the chair and the other on the back.
Brace yourself, he warned Kyle,
then pulled the chair apart. The ropes fell away like magic. Everyone but Kyle froze, listening for any sign that someone else had heard us.
Sweats, Kyle whispered to me, rolling off the chair like it hurt. Top drawer of the bigger chest of drawers. You can steal a pair, too.
He looked at the chair pieces and murmured,
The bedroom is supposed to be soundproofed. Doesn't work on Warren, but maybe we'll luck out with less gifted listeners.
The first drawer I found had underwear, so he must have meant some other top drawer. They were sorted and army neat, matching bottoms and tops folded together. I grabbed the top two sets. No one came boiling up the stairs, so either they hadn't heard the chair go, or they thought it was part of the interrogation. Stefan helped Kyle up and steadied him when he was a little wobbly on his feet. I handed over a pair of bottoms. Stefan continued to hold him upright while Kyle pulled the sweats on with great concentration. Once Kyle had the pants on and both feet on the floor to steady himself, Stefan took the rope and started to tie up the bald man.
How often do the people downstairs come up? Stefan said.
The only time anyone has come up here was a few minutes ago, Kyle told him. Could be back in a minute, or next week.
I handed Kyle a sweatshirt. He shook his head and said, That's the wrong top for these. Fashion princess. I rolled my eyes and gave him the other top, noticing only as it unfolded that it proclaimed, I'm prettier than your girlfriend in purple glittery script. I recognized it because I'd given it to him for his birthday. I have news for you, Kyle. It'll be a while before you are prettier than anyone's girlfriend. Bruises are not your best color. Are you sure you don't want the other top? He glanced at me and gave me a crooked smile.
You look worse than I do. These goons get to you, too?
We were all keeping our voices as quiet as possible. Car accident. I pulled on the sweatpants. They were tight, but Warren's would have been tighter and left me with a foot of material to trip on.
They have Warren, Kyle said, his eyes briefly looking as terrified as I was.
I know, I told him. The top that matched the sweatpants I wore was a spiffy teal. They have the rest of the pack, too.
So I gathered.
Kyle indicated with the tip of his head that his information had come from the bald man.
Are we on the side of the angels?
Kyle pulled on his top, though not without wincing. Stefan looked up from the bald man and said,
"The first one I killed because I don't let people who hurt those I care about live. He is dead in such a way that a human could have killed him. Since Mercy has been so concerned with the body count, the second man is merely out, and I made certain he did not see me. If you choose to call in the police, there is nothing that can be used against us, a werewolf or vampire."
"So our halos are nice and bright," I told Kyle. I looked at Stefan. "Is calling the police smart? Won't we be putting pressure on the bad guys to get rid of their hostages?"
"No." Stefan turned his gaze on me. "If this is a government operation, having the local police involved will force them out into the open, and they cannot afford the bodies any more than the werewolves can. If it is something spearheaded by renegade agents, which is what it sounds like, involving the police will alert the agency involved and bring us new allies. That's how we'll do this, Mercy. If we can, we trap them in their actions until the only move they have left is what we want them to do."
He took a breath, which he doesn't have to do unless he wants to talk, though he usually does, if only out of consideration for we breathers who get distressed if the people we're around don't breathe for a few minutes.
"You were right, Mercy. I was thinking like a vampire before. These people want to separate the werewolves from the protection of society, so we'll get society on our side instead. It helps that Kyle is human."
Kyle smiled like it hurt.
"Quite human. I am a black belt, got it 10 years ago and haven't practiced much since. But it could explain how I took down 2 trained men with Mercy and Ben's help."
He looked at the dead man and nodded sharply.
"Thank you for that, Stefan. He's no loss to the world."
"Will you get in trouble for his death?" I asked Kyle. He was a lawyer, family law, but he should still know. He shook his head.
"Self-defense in a slam dunk."
He looked at Stefan.
"Do you know who is responsible?"
"Renegade cantrip agents is our working hypothesis," I said. "FBI agents would have had too much experience to react out of fear the way Mr. Jones had. Homeland Security, I didn't know enough about. But cantrip, short for Combined Non-Human and Transhuman Relations Provisors, had attracted a number of anti-non-human zealots. I knew that they had training, but not much field experience, and they'd have access to as much information as the government could amass on the werewolves. For firepower, they'd have to have help. And a hired troop of competent mercenaries for muscle. Here," I jerked my chin toward the 2 men on the floor, "we have the mercenaries. There are at least 3 more downstairs. I didn't see anyone else, but they'd be done not to have someone out keeping watch."
"Mercenaries mean money," said Stefan. "A lot more money than most cantrip agents make."
Kyle smiled briefly.
"Follow the money. Fine. You're sure that the police would be helpful?"
"Wait." There had been a click. Everyone fell silent, and then air started to blow out of the registers in the floor. I'd heard the heat turn on. Stefan went to the door, cracked it open, and took a quick peek outside. He shut it noiselessly and shook his head. But he was quieter when he talked than we'd been before.
"They only really need 1 person alive to blackmail Adam. The rest are just a precaution. If Adam and the pack are hostages, they need everyone they can keep their hands on."
He frowned at us both.
"That doesn't mean they are safe. Idiots are the hardest people to plan around, and anyone who captures a werewolf pack without killing every last one is an idiot."
"Okay," said Kyle. "Let's see if we can't make this a little uncomfortable for them."
He walked to the side of the bed and picked up his cell. I grabbed his hand and looked at Stefan.
"What if they're listening to the phones?"
Stefan smiled.
"Then they'll have a warning and either run or they will attack us up here."
A lot of things could have gone wrong. We settled down to wait, ready to defend ourselves if the men downstairs decided to check on Kyle. Stefan left when the sun started coming up. Ben and I waited with Kyle, despite Kyle's protests that he could handle this on his own. We were safely out of it. If we left, we gave the enemy no one to follow. Kyle had a lot of arguments, which he delivered with the cell on mute. I wasn't leaving Kyle alone in a house full of bad guys. I finally stole his phone, took it off mute, and introduced myself to the operator.
I explained that I thought that these same men were responsible for launching an attack at my house. Yes, I was married to the local Alpha. One of the pack had escaped and found me, and we'd figured out something was wrong. We snuck in through the upstairs window just after Kyle had managed to free himself. I told her about the blood we'd found in the backyard that belonged to Kyle's boyfriend, a pack member, who had been taken off the premises by these bad guys, presumably to be held by whoever had taken the rest of the pack. Kyle listened hard, since it was the first time he'd heard a lot of what I said. I didn't give the police the whole truth. There were too many things the werewolves didn't want getting out, and I wasn't mentioning Stefan, but I stuck to it as closely as I could. When I'd finished, it was not just the SWAT team who were headed our way, but a fair percentage of a number of different police departments. And, to my relief, someone was going to go check at the firehouse where Mary Jo worked, as well as the houses of our married pack members who hadn't come to our Thanksgiving dinner, but had been taken just the same. They'd make sure that there were no other hostage situations. I handed Kyle back his phone. He shook his head at me, but took it in one hand, put it against his ear, and opened the gun safe in his closet with the other. The safe held two handguns and Warren's rifle. It was a Spencer repeating rifle dating back to the Civil War. He'd let me shoot it a couple of times. Kyle took Warren's .357 in hand and gave me his own 1911 because that fit my hand better than Warren's gun would have. My own gun was still in Marsilia's car. Kyle left the rifle in the safe when he closed it. Warren's father had carried it during the war between the states, and at his death it had come to Warren, who was 8 or 9 at the time. That's as much as I knew about Warren's life as a human, except that he considered himself a Texan and had spent a long time as a cowboy. I agreed with Kyle's decision. The Spencer was too important to be risked if the police decided to take the guns. If we had to shoot someone, it was probably going to be within handgun range anyway. "Stay quiet and find a good hiding place," said the 911 operator on the other end of the phone. She'd been giving us all sorts of good advice and updates.
"We are taking cover in the bathroom," said Kyle, and gave her the basic layout of the house, which took a while because it was a big house.
He was steady and cool while we watched the door between his bedroom and the rest of the house. The bathroom afforded us a little protection. The walls were marble slabs, and we weren't in direct line of sight from the door. Kyle kept the phone tucked between his ear and shoulder, and I could hear the operator keeping him up to date on what was happening. I had a sudden, sick thought that we really didn't know if we could trust the police. What if the government really was behind it all? What if the police were in on it, too? Paranoia, the gift of the survivor, and the burden of the overtired, stressed, terrified coyote. I thought about the likelihood of the police being under the control of the bad guys, and came up with it as being unlikely. But not as unlikely as a group of humans descending on Pack HQ and abducting a pack of wolves, including wolves who were not out, to the public. Since the latter had happened, it made me feel less paranoid for suspecting the former.
"Okay," said the operator. "The police are there and in position. Just hang tight and wait for them."
As the sounds of rapid-fire orders seeped into our bolt hole, I became more and more uneasy about trusting the police to be on our side. About that time, there was a gentle tap on the bedroom door.
"Mr. Brooks, this is Kennewick PD, sir. Please put down your weapons. We have the suspects in custody, and you are safe."
Kyle put his gun down on the floor, then noticed me not doing the same thing. He reached out toward me, and Ben growled. I was not alone in my paranoia, or else Ben was just picking up on how unhappy I was. Wounded and surrounded by the dead and terrified, he wasn't exactly Mr. Sane right now, either.
"Give us a moment," Kyle called out. "Mercy's pretty freaked out. She's had quite a night, and it's not over. Let me talk her down."
There was a pause, then a more familiar voice called,
"Mercy, drop the gun. We're the good guys. We'll find Adam, but you've got to put down the gun and let us in."
"Tony," I called out, not releasing my grip on Kyle's gun. But my stomach muscles started to loosen. Tony Montenegro worked for the Kennewick Police, and he was on our side.
"It's me, Chica. Let us do our job."
I engaged the safety and put the gun down on the floor next to Kyle's.
"Come on," Kyle said. "They'll feel better if we're not near the guns."
And then he murmured, "I'll feel better, too. Ben, is there anything you can do to look less frightening?" Ben dropped his head and tail, hopping on 3 feet to accompany us to the bedroom door. I wasn't sure his posture made him look less lethal, and that was before he ruined it by snarling at the bound kidnapper who had awakened at some point and was struggling. The bald man froze, and I patted Ben on the head. "Sorry, Ben," I murmured. "No eating the bad guys when they are tied up and the police are on the other side of the door." I wasn't really kidding, though I didn't know it until I said it. Both Ben and Kyle gave me a thoughtful look.
"I'm going to have the werewolf lie down next to the wall," Kyle said loudly. "He's already been hurt by the guys who took out Adam. I don't want anyone shooting him by accident."
"Everything's been going smoothly," said Tony reassuringly. "We've got 2 guys. They surrendered peacefully enough, so no one is too trigger-happy, except for Mercy. But lying down by the wall is a good idea."
There had been a 3rd man downstairs, I thought. Or maybe one of the 2 from below had been the man who'd come up to give the men holding Kyle their orders. I listened to Tony explain that the wolf who was in the room was one of the victims and not to be shot. He was being very cautious, but then he'd seen the werewolves before. Timberwolves are big and scary. Anyone who has ever seen one in the zoo or in the woods is in no doubt that they are in the presence of an apex predator. Werewolves are bigger and scarier than that. Sometimes they can downplay it, a little body language, a little pack magic, and they can pass for a huge dog if no one is looking for werewolves. Ben was in no condition to play harmless, which wasn't his best thing anyway. That he was wounded meant that if someone got jumpy, Ben would take it to the next level. Lying down next to the wall 10 feet from the door was as good as it got. I stood between him and the door.
"Okay," said Kyle. "No one is armed or..."
I think he started to say dangerous, but stopped himself. He'd told me that no one should lie to the police. The trick was not to tell them much until you had a lawyer.
"No one is armed."
The door opened, and the police cautiously entered, giving Ben a wide berth, which was probably smart. He might be tracking a little better than I was at that point, but not much better. And he didn't like being cornered by strangers in uniforms at the best of times. We all held very still while they examined the 2 men on the ground without touching.
"I killed the 1st guy, said Kyle,
sounding shaky. I couldn't tell if it was an act or not.
No one would believe a lawyer would confess to murder unless he was in bad shape, but Kyle didn't want them looking at Ben.
"No bite marks that I can see," said one of the officers who was kneeling by the dead man. "I'm not a doctor, but I can't turn my head that far around. I'd say his neck was broken."
The tension in the room immediately dropped, replaced by a curious elation.
"No one wants a werewolf kill on their watch," Tony explained quietly to me when he saw my expression. "And Adam has been very helpful from time to time, and no shots were fired, no one died at our hands, none of ours was hurt, and we got to play heroes. This operation went down slick and smart. It is a very good day when we can say that."
Of course, it wasn't over then. They took us to the Richland Police Department. I didn't ask why they didn't use the West Richland office. They interviewed Kyle and me separately. He'd told me that would happen. I didn't know the policeman who talked to me, but at least one of them was terrified of Ben. I had told them that Ben needed to stay with me, and they didn't argue after I pointed out to them that if I wasn't with Ben, I wouldn't be there to stop him if he got upset. I'd removed his bandages, and they'd taken photos of his wound, which still wasn't healing. I'd refused medical care for him. By that time, he was in a foul temper, in pain, his vulnerability exposed and photographed, and hungry. Someone had found a first aid kit, and I'd rewrapped his leg. His presence made the police who were talking to me start out a little unfriendly. No one likes to be afraid, and only an idiot wouldn't be a little afraid of Ben in his current mood. They also seemed to be a little slow, asking me the same questions over and over again. Then they went out for a bit and came back actively hostile. Fine, I could be hostile too. Adam was being held by crazy people with guns, and I was stuck arguing with a pair of officers I was beginning to think of as Tweedledum and Tweedledummer. Maybe Ben wasn't the only person in a bad mood. They were convinced that the attack couldn't have been unprovoked. What had the pack been involved in that got such a response? The attack on our house looked a lot like some of the drug cartel attacks. Did I know about the way the cartels were blackmailing the field hands at the paper pulp tree farms to plant drugs between the rows of trees near Burbank? About the 50th time we were going through the same old thing, they had a problem with me being unwilling to tell them where Jesse and Gabriel were hidden, a youngish man in a very well-tailored suit came in and introduced himself as Lauren Hoskins, my lawyer. He advised me not to say another word, so I shut up and let him do his job. An unpleasant 3.5 hours later, he escorted me outside, a firm warning to me that I leave the police work to the police ringing in my ears. Presumably that meant that they didn't want me out looking for Adam because the police are so well equipped to take on guys capable of taking out a whole werewolf pack. I might have said something to that effect as we were leaving, but they didn't have a werewolf's hearing, so the only one who heard me was my lawyer.
"They have training that you don't," said the lawyer in a very quiet voice.
That was true, but they didn't have a mate bond and a werewolf pacing beside them. Ben was limping, but he was putting weight on his bad leg. Either he was getting better, or he was so tired all of his legs hurt.
"Kyle called me," Lauren, my lawyer, said, opening the back door of his car to let Ben inside without any apparent concern for his leather upholstery or the worry of having a werewolf sitting at his back while he drove.
"He told me he thought that the both of you were at a point that a lawyer would be good, and heavily implied that if they were being so hard on him, it might be because there was some pressure from above. He also said in so many words that if they were giving him, a lawyer, a hard time, that they were likely doing worse to you. Would I mind coming to your rescue and sending a lackey his way?"
He held open his passenger door for me like a gentleman. I was sweaty, bloody, bruised, and wearing Kyle's sweats. We were getting looks from people walking by, the nice-looking, well-dressed man and the psycho woman from hell. Inviting me into his car might have been a braver thing than letting in a werewolf he didn't know.
"They didn't have you under arrest," he told me, "so theoretically we could have walked out of there any time, but I didn't like the vibe I was getting from them. If I'd pushed earlier, we might just have gotten you arrested, which is ridiculous under the circumstances."
I sat down and discovered that the relative safety of his car was enough to make me try to doze off as soon as the seatbelt was fastened and the door shut.
"Kyle's free as well," Lauren, my lawyer, said, waking me up from my doze.
I don't think that he'd noticed I'd fallen asleep as we were just turning out of the parking lot. I'd missed him getting in, starting the car, and backing out of his parking space.
"According to my associate who texted me, they released Kyle as soon as his lawyer appeared. While we were talking to the nice police officers, Kyle has been to his doctor, who has already checked him out and let him go. Kyle texted me as well. He suggests that I drop you by his place for lunch. He told me to let you know that he has hired a security team to watch the house to keep this from happening again."
I needed to find Adam in the pack. Before I could do that, I needed to contact Adam. My hands closed into fists, and I had to flatten them on my leg. I needed to check with Gabriel and Jesse. And I needed to check with Tad, who had expected me back a long time ago. Gabriel's sister's phone was in Marsilia's car, and so was my gun. "What time is it?" I asked.
12:30.
I'd been up for 30 hours and was stumbling, stupid, tired. I needed a safe place to sleep before I would be useful to anyone. Kyle's house was as good as any.
"Sure," I said. "Wake me up when we get there."
After that initial bit, I found I couldn't sleep with a stranger so near. I kept my lids closed, though, and it helped with the dry burn in my eyes from staying up too long. I directed him to turn a block later than Kyle's house, and he let Ben and me out by Marsilia's car. He glanced at me and glanced at the car. Sure, blood, bruises, and werewolves didn't make him turn a hair, but me driving Marsilia's car? That was worth a second look. I'd left the keys in the pocket of my jeans, which were still in the back seat. Anyone could have sat down, pressed the ignition button, and driven off. There were some places, down by my garage was one of them, that you wouldn't want to do that. But here, in the wealthy area of West Richland, it was more or less safe. Besides, who would believe that someone would leave a key in a car like that instead of locking up? I opened the back door of the car, and Ben, somewhat wearily, hopped in onto the blood-stained blankets. He was tired, or he'd just have run the block or so to Kyle's house. He looked thinner than he had earlier that night. He hadn't eaten since Thanksgiving dinner yesterday evening, and he was going to need a lot of food. Kyle would have red meat for Warren. I should have thought of that. Laura and my lawyer wouldn't have minded stopping at a fast food place to get food for Ben. I needed to take better care of him. I pressed my fingers to my cheekbones and let the pain from my injury drive my tears away. I would cry when everyone was home. Everyone except for Peter. Until then, I had more important things to do. I parked the car in Kyle's pristine driveway. When Kyle opened his door to let Ben and me in, he did a double take.
Holy Hummer, Batgirl, where did you get a Mercedes AMG?
Kyle had changed out of his sweats and wore a black and red button-up shirt that complemented his dark hair and went with the black slacks that were so casual I knew they must have cost him a pretty penny. We all found our refuges where we could. I baked cookies, and Kyle wore expensive clothes. It's not my car, I told him. Marsilia left it for an oil change, and I couldn't resist. Kyle knew who Marsilia was, so I added, Ben's been bleeding all over the back seat. Do you think we can clean the blood out of the leather well enough that she'll keep it? Who do you think should pay for the damage? Ben for bleeding on it? The bad guys for shooting Ben so he was bleeding in the first place? Or me for stealing it?
That is Marsilia's car, and you stuck a bleeding werewolf in the back seat?
Kyle said, ignoring my attempted humor.
I shouldn't have sent Lauren. You'd have been safer stuck in the black hole of the justice system for a few months until something distracts the Queen of the Damned from killing you.
He picked up my name for Marsilia. I hoped he never used it around her. I noticed that the earlier red marks on his face had darkened to bruises to go with the other bruises he had. His nose had been reset, but both of his eyes were black and puffed up. I might have won the disreputable award last night, but with Kyle's new bruises, for the first time in a long time, someone looked more beat up than I did. He limped when he stepped back to let me in. It's a good thing for the guy who beat on you that Stefan killed him, I said soberly as I walked into the entryway. Ben also limped, and I found that since my knee decided to hurt, I was limping too. That made three of us. Kyle's house smelled like gun oil and strangers. Or he'd have to face Warren. Kyle flinched, closing the door behind Ben.
I know. It's going to be months before I'm not explaining my face to everyone I meet. Hello. No, I was beaten by an army of muscle-bound men who didn't even have the courtesy to be cute. No, don't worry about it. I'm fine now. The nose just has a little bump. Like Marilyn's mole, it emphasizes the perfection of the rest of my face.
He glanced down at Ben.
Both of you come into the kitchen. Ben, I've pulled out the remains of last night's turkey. There's also 4 pounds of roast I was going to cook tomorrow. I'll cook Warren another turkey so he can have turkey hash. It's on a platter on the table.
Ben rubbed his muzzle over Kyle's shoulder in a way that I think was supposed to be reassuring. Kyle sucked in a breath. Either it hurt, or the reminder that the werewolf was big enough to rub his shoulder without much effort wasn't exactly reassuring.
Ben, when was the last time you brushed your teeth? Asked Kyle.
Or else Ben's breath was really bad. Ben showed his teeth in a mannerly grin and started eating the food Kyle had left on the table with enthusiastic concentration. I slumped in one of the breakfast bar stools and blew out a loud breath.
Did you find out if they found out anything about them?
I asked. Kyle gave me a look, then busied himself making me a peanut butter and huckleberry jelly sandwich.
What really bothers me is that I understood that question. You'll eat this and go to sleep so your pronouns get their antecedents back. The police haven't gotten very far yet investigating the men who invaded my house. The bad guys have good lawyers, very good lawyers. Not as good as Lauren, and nowhere near as good as I am, of course, but top-notch, expensive, out-of-town lawyers. Lauren tells me that he thinks a lot of them will be out on bail by tomorrow because of all the money floating around. Tough to keep them when the only dead body is one of theirs, and by my own testimony, he was the only one guilty of assault.
I stared at him over the sandwich he put in front of me.
You're kidding, right?
Kyle shook his head.
Eat that, Mercy. Don't just stare at it. Dickens has it that the law is a ass, and a lot of the times he is right. We have them on criminal trespass. Tony is incensed, he told me, but they can't get them for terrorist activity.
Somehow the two men downstairs were unarmed when they were arrested, so another man must have gotten away with their weapons, because the police turned my house upside down looking for guns while they were questioning us, and all they found were our guns, the guns we took from the bad guys, and the Spencer in the gun safe. I thought about the man who'd given the orders, who might or might not have been one of the men in the living room, and my vague suspicion that they would have left someone on